540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says he had a productive meeting with President Biden in the Oval Office today. They did not reach an agreement, but sources familiar tell CBS News that the White House team is heading back to the Hill tonight to resume negotiations. More from CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
The President and the House Speaker agree the national debt should be addressed and a deal should be reached, but philosophical differences on how to do it remain. Mr. Biden and fellow Democrats believe the government should take in more in taxes from the wealthy and large corporations. Kevin McCarthy rules that out.
The problem is not revenue, the problem is spending.
The president notes both he and the speaker will still face a challenge if the pair does reach a deal.
We gotta get something that can sell to both sides.
Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, Washington.
Brian Koberger, the man accused of stabbing to death four University of Idaho students in their off-campus house, chose to stand silent during a portion of today's arraignment. CBS's Lilia Luciano explains.
All right.
Wearing an orange jumpsuit, 28-year-old Brian Koberger returned to the Latah County Courthouse in Moscow, Idaho, briefly smiling at his attorney before staring straight ahead as the judge read the charges against him. Four counts of first-degree murder and one count of felony burglary.
Do you understand the charges? Count two, murder in the first degree.
Yes.
Do you understand the maximum penalty?
Yes.
When asked to enter a plea, his attorney declined, saying Koberger was standing silent. The judge entered not guilty pleas on
Officials in New York City and New York State are asking the federal government to expedite work permits for tens of thousands of migrants who've been deliberately bused to northern cities, mostly from Texas. New York City Mayor Eric Adams.
If these asylum seekers cannot work, it is going to be a major impediment and interruption in the pursuit of that dream. And that is all they ask for.
The NAACP is cautioning travelers against visiting Florida. The civil rights organization alleges Florida has become increasingly hostile to Black Americans under the leadership of Republican Governor Ron DeSantis. NAACP President and CEO Derek Johnson tells CBS News.
We recognize that it is a direct attack not only on the African American community, but the Latino community, on women, on LGBT plus QIA community, and that's a problem.
The Florida governor's office calls the move a stunt. In Michigan, a few months after a deadly shooting at Michigan State University, Governor Gretchen Whitmer signs into law a bill that allows guns to be removed from people who are believed to pose an imminent threat to themselves or others. This is CBS News.
Find your next great hire with Indeed. Their hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Watts, your personal injury attorneys dedicated to helping you get the justice you deserve. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. One person is dead after a rash of weekend violence in Milwaukee. 10 other people were wounded, including three teenagers. Milwaukee police arrested a couple of suspects. Republicans in Washington are pushing for spending cuts in exchange for helping raise the nation's debt ceiling. Senator Ron Johnson tells Upfront on Channel 12 in Milwaukee the prospect of going into default June 1st is a phony crisis.
We have more than enough revenue coming in to pay for our debt servicing, Social Security, probably Medicare. Now, some of these agencies might have to shut down temporarily, but there's no need for a crisis whatsoever.
On the other hand, Democrat Tammy Baldwin says default would lead to interest rate hikes and cuts to crucial programs. In sports, the Red Hot Astros bring their 7-game winning streak to Milwaukee tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson & Watts, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win. Gingras Thompson & Watts. GTWLawyers.com.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Folks, I tell you this much, the Cripes Cast is just the butter on my cheese.
Cockroaches, not that bad. They call them palmetto bugs in South Carolina. Same thing, you can call them up here.
Are they really
and
palmetto bugs?
Yes. Yeah, and they're a great source of protein. They're Did going you know to be that? The lobsters of the future.
They also got salmonella, and they can lay like 40 eggs at once.
Well, they gotta work out a few kinks there, okay? They gotta work out a few kinks.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
Some lasted only 2 days. The longest was 19 days long. In 2002, the Chicago Teachers Union again went out on strike, recalling their historic fighting spirit. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
It's an odd marketing strategy for an industry to assail its own customers. Yet, that's what the monopolistic meatpacking industry, led by such huge conglomerates as Tyson, Smithfield, JBS, and Hormel, that control nearly 70% of America's pork market, is doing. Just shut up and eat your bacon, the industry shrieks. The target of their corporate tantrum is the growing grassroots movement of consumers, animal rights advocates, farmers, and others who are dismayed and disgusted by Big Pork's profiteering on animal cruelty. None of your business, shout the executives, lobbyists, lawyers, and far-rent politicians who run the torturous system. But gutsy groups like the Humane Society made their way inside the industry's animal factories, videoing such mass horrors as thousands of pregnant sows locked for 16 weeks at a time in gestation crates so small the animals can't even turn around. In 2018, such exposés prompted 60% of California voters to approve a ballot initiative outlawing the use of these inhumane crates. Adding plutocratic stupidity to their greed, the pork barons then sued the people for overreaching their power. Yes, the pork profiteers actually asserted that democracy, i.e. people power, must not interfere with, quote, sound business practices. Never mind that few of us uncorporatized commoners consider animal suffering to be a sound practice. Even the corporate coddling Supreme Court gagged at the industry's claim that it has the sovereign power to dictate what type of pork chops are available to the public. This month, in an Oddfellow 5-4 decision rendered by 2 progressive judges and 3 corporatists, the court ruled that policy choices like these usually belong to the people. Well, yes, and to the animals. This is Jim Hightower saying, here's an example of how grassroots activism matters in important ways. To stay involved, go to humanesociety.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Ohio Senator J.D. Vance tweeted out, letting in too many people drives up housing costs for normal Americans. Stop Biden's border crisis and stop his war on home affordability. And he points out that that rent increases since 1999 rents have gone up 135%. Income growth, 76%. So massive, massive difference between the amount of money people are making and they're paying out in rent. According to JD, it's all the illegals coming in and buying up and renting all of the high priced housing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, JD. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, and welcome back to the States. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
So, welcome home. Good trip?
Yes, it was absolutely excellent. I must say, the Indians have handled inflation.
And how did they do that?
Don't buy things. I was amazed. Of course, the average Indian, you know, makes $210 a month. I mean, it's a country that has obviously a portion of the population on extremely low wages, and then again, people are growing in the population, and you know, they've done a decent job going up the ladder. But I asked, I said, "How is this and that?" And, you know, they just sort of, the Indians are really kind of frugal people if they need to be. And, you know, of course, they're used to living, a lot of people in a small space, and families live together. You know, if this were India, my kids and my grandkids and I would be all in this, you know, the same house. I would be probably visiting you and Carol every other weekend if that happened.
No, you're always
love
welcome.
My grandkids. Yeah, love my grandkids. But, you know, so, anyway. In all seriousness, they just, you know, certain times they just don't buy certain things. And because, and the view of a lot of my friends is that, you know, it's corporate manipulation too.
Yeah, no, this was my argument with the eggs.
Prices go high, then the prices don't go low.
Right, this was my argument when the eggs were $9 a dozen, and people were freaking out, going, just don't buy them. Well, we have to buy them. No, you don't.
No, you don't.
And now that they're, you know, what cracks me up is everyone blamed Biden for that. It's all Biden's fault. Biden, $9, all Biden's fault. Now they're a buck a dozen? Not a peep.
Well, let's go back to COVID and toilet paper, right?
Yeah.
It was flying off the shelves. You couldn't get it. And, of course, you know, it would continue to be that way. Prices jump up. Scarcity. Gasoline's the same way. And I think that the corporations know that. I was talking to, as you know, I flip houses. I was talking to some fellow flippers. And we were talking just yesterday. And I said, look, you know, the prices went up. And you walk in, well, that price is high because of the supply chain. Well, if you really look at it, all right, and the lumber went up to, you know, $12 a piece, and it went from 4 to, you know, 12, and now it's 10. Wow, isn't that great? Why is it 10? Yeah, there's certain things going on in the market.
Yeah. No, I mean, the thing is, you know, as I said, you brought up the toilet paper. The reason toilet paper was so expensive is it was scarce. You would go to the store, it wasn't there. We were missing toilet paper, whole aisles full of nothing. I understand that. But when I went to the store to buy eggs, there didn't seem to be a shortage of eggs. They were all there. There were lots of them there. I mean,
you're
that's the thing.
Pay a lot more.
I'm just being gouged. And surprisingly, you know, 60 Minutes. Did you watch the 60 Minutes bit yesterday?
No, I didn't see it.
Now, on the Pentagon gouging the taxpayers?
No, I mean, I heard about it, but I didn't see it. And that, because that fit into a one of the shows that I do, they asked me about, well, you know, defense. And I said, it can sustain cuts without hurting strength. And they said, what do you mean? And I had talked to them about this. And then this was before 60 Minutes. And then 60 Minutes came up, and they were talking about it, and I looked at the clips, and, you know, living proof. It's incredible. There are areas that, you know, you can go in and not necessarily cut it. Let's not use the word cut. You know, fix it, tweak it.
We can correct it. Look, I mean, the one guy who was a negotiator said, look, we negotiate in 12 to 15% profit, which is a healthy profit. He said, right now, they're making about 40% profit. Gee, I wonder, when Raytheon, back in December, said they were going to buy $6.5 billion in their stocks back, where did that money come from? Oh, yeah, us.
Well, the price of vaccines, who was it? After everything calmed down, they were one of the pharmaceuticals was going to have it up at like $100 or something. And they were subsidized by the United States government you know, all that time. And then all of a sudden, and they made profit on that. And then all of a sudden they were going to, you know, raise it. The fact that this country allowed that, what was that lunatic's name, that young kid that bought
AIDS
medication?
Yeah, Martin, yeah. Something with an S.
So we have a country where you're allowed to purchase something that's $2 or $3 and make it $600 to a hedge fund.
Yep.
Yeah, this is incredible. It just shouldn't be. So yes, part of it is inflation and part of it is the supply chain, but part of it too is that the companies know our buying mentality. They know our mentality, period, and they use it.
Now, as I said from the beginning, good old fashioned American greed. That's the majority of our problem right now. At least that's my view. We brought up the Pentagon. Did you see the explosion today? You know, the explosion that didn't happen in real life, but there was an AI generated image that it caused the market to take a little tank for a minute. Did you see that?
Right. And at first, of course, the reports I had from friends is that actually happened.
So my question is as AI gets more realistic, as deep fakes get much more realistic, How much of this do we? How much of this do we have to endure? And at a certain point, do we ignore? Do we become desensitized to it? Ignore it so that if something really does happen, we're kind of out on a ledge. Any thoughts?
Well, I think we are already to that point. I have been screaming about AI for a long time. When I was in Congress, you know, I used to talk about the obsession of the United States government. I'm going to make that a big plural government. The obsession of the United States government for AI. Now, you can imagine why parts of the government were obsessed with AI. Robots for war, you know? Sure. And then the companies that promote the sale and creation of those items, you know, for warfare. But I had a friend of mine who, I was posting some things to them, and they said, this is against conservatism. This is against free America, free market, you know, free choices. This isn't free choices. This is boiling down already to where a fake AI image generated a bump in the stock market. What's going to happen during the election when you have a Biden or a Trump that says something and it just goes like wildfire and we don't know right away that it's not them. It's generated AI. This horse is already running down the road.
Yeah, I don't know how we deal with that. I mean, I don't know how in this society of hyper-reactionaries who are just looking to score points or, you know, my team's going to win. I don't know in the red hat, blue hat world. I don't know how we do this.
I don't know. But it's right now it's just out there and you can do what you please. And I worry internally, too, what the government's doing in the sense of, you know, who's looking at it. And this brings, because my friends have laughed at me, but this brings shades of the Terminator. You know, you've got who in the Congress, in the government, knows exactly what agencies are doing or not doing with AI? Who knows? You know, is there any internal regulation? Those are questions that need to be asked. And the answer can't be, well, in the interest of national security, we can't tell you. Because that's the standard answer, in the interest of national security, which usually means hold on because you're in for a bumpy ride.
So as a former legislator, is it too late? I mean, have we allowed this to go on for far too long? I mean, not just here in the U.S., but, you know, as a globe, has this gone too far out of hand?
Yes, I think it has. And all of a sudden, if you notice, when did this whole AI deal kick in? I mean, in the last 90 days, you saw more sponsored items on Facebook. The guy with the green face, sometimes they made it look like Morgan Freeman because of his voice. And they're talking to you. I can write any topic you want me to write on. And then they can generate letters if you say, I want to see the Last Supper, if everybody was dressed in 1980 clothes. I mean, this is everywhere.
Yeah.
And it really, like in the last 90 days, it's sort of like somebody's behind a great big promotion campaign of it, or people are behind it. And I just think that, you know, the world needs to begin to talk about which direction we go. I mean, you need also people who have the creative and intellect and scientific ability to talk about this. I mean, I'm sure there's things there that we don't even think about, that somebody that's in this field can say, hey, by the way, did you think about this? You better take a look at it.
Yeah. No, I mean, you've got a CEO of one of the companies going, hey, maybe you should regulate us. Yeah, I think maybe there's a problem there.
But exactly.
But I saw this Reuters story today that Israel plans on being the AI superpower of the world because of their technological prowess. And you go, is this going to be what rebalances power? Will our missiles and our tanks and all that stuff, will that be meaningless when you're talking about the future of information, the future of communication, the future of this AI stuff? Is that a problem?
Right. I mean, in Jerusalem today, it said Israel aims to parlay its technological prowess to become the artificial intelligence superpower, like you said. And this is the who is this? This isn't the prime minister. This is the defense ministry, You know, world order, defense. I know there's all these conspiracy theories, but why is it the defense ministries? Why is it that in America the Defense Department talks about this? And they were talking in Israel about advances in autonomous warfare. Autonomous warfare.
Transformers.
And streamlined combat decision-making. Now, what does that mean? Those two computers, we've taught them to talk to each other, they're going to make the decision who's going to get hit or who's not going to get hit. And, of course, one day those computers might talk to each other literally and say, those little people that breathe and have that heartbeat, they're not good for us.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
let's hack into some of these nuclear codes.
This is all those bad 80s movies.
Yes, it is.
Coming to reality. I mean, when this I was reading awesome. It, I was going, I remember as a kid reading this stuff going, wow, what a world that would be, going, maybe it's not such a great idea.
Right.
This is one of those things. It's like I say about 1984, the Orwell classic. You know, there's two ways of looking at that. That's a cautionary tale of, hey, don't let that happen. Or it's a, hey, this is a pretty good playbook. But is the same thing on the AI front. Become a Luddite and start smashing the machines, or where we're sadly going to head.
Well, this is, you know, Arnold can't run for governor again, but that old expression, all be Bach, you know, from the Terminator movie is not far off.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Let there be
fun. Somebody's got to talk about it. You're right, though. See, you have a CEO warning us. That tells you something.
Yeah. That doesn't happen often.
No, it doesn't.
Finally, I want to get your thoughts, because you say that Trump isn't going to go to jail for the documents. But Ty Cobb, one of Trump's former attorneys, he's predicting Trump's going to do time. Because evidently the information that we're finding out is that Trump was warned numerous times and counseled numerous times over the span of the year that he was holding on to stuff. And this former attorney for Trump saying, hey, he's going to go to jail. Do you agree or disagree?
I disagree for several reasons. One, I don't believe that the Department of Justice is going to pull the trigger on this, you know, legally. I just don't believe they're going to do it in the end. And part of it is the problem, and I know it's a different deal of, you know, how many documents Biden had and the cooperation or not, et cetera, and Pence had documents, but it's a factor. And nobody can tell me that in justice they aren't sitting there thinking, well, you know, he had documents, he had more, he had some in his garage. I mean, you know they're having these discussions. I just think they're not going to go after Trump on that. The other thing is, this will be, and I've read about, you know, the lawyers, of course, but this will be a game of one lawyer said this, the other's lawyer said that, and then there's the little poison pill that comes out of, you know, so somebody advised the lawyers or, you know, somebody within the document system. So I just think it's so twisted and convoluted at this point. I just don't think he will do any time for this whole thing.
Well, we will see how it plays out. But it's interesting that one of his lawyers saying he's going to go to jail.
Oh, yeah. It is.
We will see.
Is.
But, Bob, I appreciate the time. Welcome back. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Okay. Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1895. Labor organizer Eugene V. Debs began a 6-month prison sentence in Woodstock, Illinois.
Debs was the leader of the American Railway Union that had led a nationwide boycott and strike against the Pullman Palace Car Company in 1894. Federal troops had brutally crushed the strikes. But bullets and bayonets were not the only federal weapon. On July 2, 1894, a federal circuit court in Illinois issued an injunction against Debs and other labor leaders. The stated basis of the injunction was that the boycott interfered with the delivery of the U.S. mail. The injunction prohibited Debs from doing anything to encourage participation in the boycott. The New York Times recognized that the broadness of the injunction made it a Gatling gun on paper. It was aimed to cut down the power of the workers' union. Injunctions would remain a powerful anti-union tool for the next four decades, until laws were passed limiting their power. Debs was found to be in contempt of court for violating the order. He appealed the decision, and the case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Among Debs' defense team was a young lawyer named Clarence Darrow. Darrow would go on to become a legal champion for working people. The Supreme Court upheld the legality of the injunction, and Eugene Debs reported to prison. While serving his sentence, he spent much of his time reading. It began his political transformation and caused Debs to begin to question the capitalist system that seemed rigged against working people who dared to try and stand up in solidarity. Soon after prison, he became a socialist, running for president four times. In November, Debs finished his sentence and returned to Chicago to a crowd of thousands of cheering friends, supporters, and workers. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Got something to look forward to this week. As a Pennsylvania resident, everyone else indulge me, but State Senator Doug Mastriano says this could be announcement week. He is teasing what he is saying is crazy good news, that he may run for Senate. Oh, please. This is one of those things where I'm going, oh, please. There was nothing better than watching Mastriano go down in flames. I mean, he was even worse than the last crazy Republican that ran for governor, Scott Wagner, who literally threatened the incumbent governor to stomp on his face with golf spikes because, you know, the governor put up a billboard, you know, was calling him out. Going to step on your face. That has got to be, you know, it's one of those things where you go, got to be one of the weirdest comments. One of the weirdest comments that I've ever heard a politician come up with. Just one of the weirdest things that someone's ever. I got to play. Actually, I got to play it. It's just one of those things where I got to, this is a guy running for governor here in Pennsylvania. His name was Scott Wagner. He was a state senator. He had resigned as a state senator, ran for governor. This is him on the side of the road under a billboard, fuming mad that someone had said something about him. But this is Scott Wagner.
Well, Governor Wolf, let me tell you, between now and November 6th, you better put a catcher's mask on your face, because I'm going to stomp all over your face with golf spikes, because I'm going to win this for the state of Pennsylvania, and we're throwing you out of office, because you know what? I'm sick and tired of your negative ads.
I'm tired of you saying bad things about me. So I'm going to assault you with my golf spikes. Now, you thought that was bad? Mastriano, so much worse. And actually got beaten by a whole lot more. So please run for Senate. Oh, please. By all means, because I can't imagine a crazy person as a senator from my state. Just a thought. Now, this AI stuff, you know, I've been talking about this for a while. I don't know what the future is going to be for us. Some of the deep fakes I've seen. Wow. Remember not too long ago, and this is my problem. My problem is when something goes out, it goes viral, everyone grabs a hold of it.
undoing the damage that it did is darn near impossible. I've talked to a couple of people here recently. I go, you know, hey, did you hear about that story in New York where they're bringing in the illegals and they're kicking the veterans out of the hotels? And they're like, yeah, that's horrible. I can't believe that's going on. They all heard it. It never happened. It was staged. It was a lie. And it got picked up in place after place after place. And, you know, it was just one of those things that, because of social media, now there's a part of me that goes, maybe this is a moment where we all collectively go, you know, everything you see on social media is BS. Maybe there's a moment where you go, you know, Twitter at one point had a verification system where, you know, when you had your blue check mark, you had a code of conduct, you had to follow some rules or you could lose it. Like, you couldn't spread propaganda, you couldn't spread, you know, this kind of absolutely false information, or they would take your coveted blue check. Now, for $8, any idiot with one follower can be verified, which is completely done away with the value of it. There's no social media that you go, oh yeah, that's a verified source now. All the verifications come with some kind of a payout or some kind of a monetary part of this where you go, I'm sorry, the people who are spending this money to get this kind of attention, I don't know that I'm buying into. And especially the viral stuff. I mean, it used to be what I said of Twitter back in 2011. While we were in Wisconsin sleeping on the Capitol floor, I would joke, thank you, CNN, for telling me what's on Twitter, because the people who were on the ground were tweeting what was happening in those moments. They were taking videos of what was going on inside the Capitol. There was some citizen journalism going on. And there were people who came out of that with integrity. And, you know, it wasn't about getting attention. It was about, you know, getting out the story. That has now morphed into, you know, just, you know, a little over a decade later, into it's all about the attention. It's all about the clicks and the views and how much they can monetize it. So my concern is this stuff now becomes just misery-tainment. You know, some kind of political, hey, we're going to make money off of this. And we end up losing. Democracy loses. We're in for interesting times. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you concerned? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcasts, you will find ours. Appreciate you being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming